Today on Wings. From 1980 until 2015, Libby Davies represented the political interests of her neighbors on Vancouver's downtown east side, including homeless and underhoused people, sex trade workers, low-waged workers, and people with addictions.
You know, drug use exists at every level of society. Judges, lawyers, professionals, cops. But it's the visibility of poverty that we see on the street that gets the target of law enforcement. That's changing. But for years, that stigma literally drilled people into their graves.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In July 2022, Libby Davies talked and read from her memoir, titled Outside In, about her 6 terms in city politics and 6 in Parliament with Canada's New Democratic Party. Issues she raised, like legalizing safe injection sites, decriminalizing sex work, raising minimum wage, and funding a national housing strategy, affected policies and continue to do so today.
Outside In. I've always felt like an outsider, and I think many people do. I've always felt that I was reaching in to this world of rules and process, and I've always been trying to figure out how that works. My mother, who lived to be 100 years old, told me that I was always a rebel, even as a kid, so much so that the relatives, who didn't visit very often, didn't like to meet me because I was kind of snarling and pushing. And so my mom always said, I broke every rule in the book. So it's always seemed strange to me to be so deeply immersed in the political world, where there are so many rules, many of them unwritten, I can tell you, so many practices that are old and old-fashioned and don't make sense. I was elected over 31 years, locally and nationally, and I think especially in Ottawa for 18 of those years, that it was like a deep dive into the murky depths of an ocean. And in that ocean, sometimes there were beautiful schools of fish that you could be a part of, and you could swim around and feel like you were part of something in this lovely school of fish. But I learned that in this murky underwater world, there were also monsters and predators who could hang out in caves, lurking, and could come out. And when you came up for air, when I came up for air, as I did every week, heading back from Ottawa to East Vancouver, I felt like I had to be careful because it was like coming up from a deep dive, you know, the benzies, you know, your brain was scrambled. Leaving that world, this crazy Ottawa bubble of politics and intrigue and all this insider stuff, back to my real world of East Vancouver, where people were literally dying on the street. And so part of my life, my political life and my personal life, has been trying to figure out how to reconcile those two different things. And sometimes I'd shake myself in surprise and wonder, and I still do, how did someone like me, really kind of a shit disturber from the downtown east side, never finished university, I don't have any degrees or anything, I just kind of got out there and started organizing. So how did someone like me end up in Ottawa as the house leader for the NDP and the only woman house leader? You know, every party has a political leader, of course, but we also have a house leader, and you're in charge of what goes on in Parliament for your party. So it's very detailed. Who's speaking what? What do we do about this legislation? Are we for it, against it? How do we approach it? All of that inside Parliament, where it was archaic. It was sexist. It was full of intrigue. And so these two different worlds were thousands of miles apart, not only geographically, but culturally, politically, and in any sense you cared to measure. So what motivated me is a sense of urgency about what we need to change when we can see injustice around us. And it feels personal because it's about people you know, it's about people you work with. I lived in the downtown East Side from, I was age 20 after I left home. I was there for quite a few years. I was an organizer, and it was still called Skid Road in those days. And they were literally life and death issues, people dying in fires, people facing slum landlords and being evicted. I mean, these issues still go on today, unfortunately, almost 50 years later. But I needed to get in there and try and do something in my community. And transformative change and the need to figure out how to bring about transformative change is the reason I wrote this book. I left Ottawa in 2015, and my partner, Kim, she really encouraged me to sit down and start just writing anything before I forgot, to communicate what I understand transformative change to be and how we can work for it together. Give ourselves voice, but also build allies and relationships and build a movement. And more importantly, how do we connect these worlds of politics that we feel often so cynical about and activism that's grassroots, that's full of energy and hope, but feels very cynical about the political world? And I encountered that 1,000 times over in many different ways, and I was always fascinated by it. And so I think it became sort of a mission for me to be some sort of bridge, because I came from that activist world. And even as a, quote, politician, I saw myself as an activist. And politics was just a tool, was just a way to look about how to bring about change. But I also wanted to write to overcome what I see increasingly from people is cynicism. You know, we live in this world where the corporate media shrinks and shrinks, the political discourse shrinks and shrinks. We look at what's happening to the south of us, and I think it's so easy to feel despair, to feel a lack of hope or optimism about what we're facing, whether it's environmentally, whether it's based on race, whether it's based on indigenous issues, the whole caboodle, right? It's all connected. And it's easy for us to feel powerless, like, where do we begin? And to feel cynical that my voice doesn't count, your voice doesn't count, our voice doesn't count, because we've been told that over and over. How many articles have I read? How much in the media? You know, all politicians are bad, it's all corrupt, forget about those people, it won't make any difference. And I wanted to write about what difference there is, can be, and how we can overcome that cynicism. And that change is possible. It's very simple. Change is possible when we engage. When we engage with each other. When we engage with the systems, the forces, the obstacles around us. When we learn how to do it. So it, for me, it's always been, of course, it's about the what. You know, like if I asked every one of you in this room, what do you believe in? What do you dream about? What do you hope for? I know you could tell me in 30 seconds. But if I asked you also, how do you do that? It's a much tougher question. So that's what I wanted to get into was the how. That change is possible. And it's the matter of turning frustration into action for change. And for many of the issues that I worked on, they were big issues that nobody wanted to deal with. When I went to Ottawa in 1997, people were dying every day of drug overdoses. Sex workers were disappearing. People were destitute and homeless on the street. And nobody in Ottawa wanted to talk about it. It wasn't considered, you know, the political agenda. And so I went to Ottawa thinking, my God, you know, like, where do I begin? So I was asking myself these questions. How do I take these issues that are so important and get that out there in Ottawa? And so I went there with that sense of urgency and motivation. And I want to begin with just a first reading that hopefully will give you a sense of what I faced at the very beginning. And this was actually the very first day that I arrived in Ottawa. It was the opening day. You know, you have that speech from the throne and all of that stuff. So, as luck would have it, an opportunity arose with the opening of the new parliament. The same day, I rushed through the anti-choice rally to get to parliament on time, as Julius Fisher filmed me. The speech from the throne is delivered in the Senate by the Governor General, and by custom, MPs traipse down the marble hallway and crowd into the Senate chamber entrance to hear the speech that outlines the government's agenda and intentions. I dutifully followed along with a crowd of MPs from the House of Commons, not feeling too enamored of the pomp and ceremony. It seemed a waste of time to me, and I felt slightly irritable and not at all in awe of the long-held tradition. Turning to look at the person next to me, I realized it was Alan Rock, the Minister of Health. Without thinking, I introduced myself. We were walking down the stately hall, squeezed together like a sedate mob, heading toward the Senate chamber. In a breathless rush, I stammered that I represented the riding of Vancouver East and that people were dying from drug overdoses and we needed to stop that. It was a life and death situation, I told him, looking him straight in the eye. I asked if I could meet him to explain more. He smiled and said, "Of course. Just contact his office." I have no other memory of the speech from the throne, only jubilation that the Minister of Health had agreed to meet me on this critical issue. I headed back to the riding in Vancouver, and a few days later, I held a press conference in my small community office on Main Street. The storefront office was already busy with constituents coming by to ask for help, and on that day, reporters showed up as Bud Osborne and I talked urgently about the drug crisis and the need for a health-based approach by the federal government. The province newspaper gave a lively headline the next day. "Give junkies drugs," says MP. Quote, "Doctors should be permitted to prescribe hard drugs, heroin and cocaine, to addicts," Libby Davies, NDP MP for Vancouver East, said yesterday. Quote, "It's time for politicians to really stand up and deal with the issue fair and square, and some new approaches are needed," she said. The headline was a bit startling, but so far, so good, I thought. At least we're getting people's attention. Back in Ottawa, we had not yet had a response on my promised meeting from Alan Rock's office. And the realization sunk in that, of course, it wasn't so easy for a new opposition backbencher to secure a formal meeting with a government minister. So much for my naive jubilation. I stewed over this a bit and tried to think what Bruce would have done to get a meeting. And then I got it. I walked down to the minister's office after question period, and I carefully opened the door. I put on my best smile and explained to his office staff that we had tried repeatedly to follow up on the minister's agreement to meet with me on the dire situation in the downtown east side. They seemed completely unaware of this and said they would look into it and get back to me. I knew they wouldn't. I politely told them I wasn't going to leave their office until they booked a time to meet within a reasonable time period, say a couple of weeks. There was silence. Then I added that I had media waiting outside the door. This wasn't quite true. Though I had talked to Gary Engler at the Vancouver Sun, who was on standby to hear how things went. More silence. I stood there waiting, and then sat down with a determined look on my face. It was now clear I wasn't leaving until something happened. Within a few minutes, the staffer came back and said, "Yes, absolutely. A meeting could happen," and named the specific day and time. I said thank you and left. My hands were shaking, and I felt a rush of adrenaline and relief that I hadn't been kicked out. It felt pretty good that, aided by Bruce's example, my community organizing instincts had kicked in. I had my first meeting with the minister in November. I don't remember much from the meeting, only that I implored him to allow a safe injection site to be set up and to allow doctors to legally prescribe heroin to chronic users, and that housing was a huge priority too. I want to skip now to another issue that was motivating me and that was huge and that brought me into this question again of how to bring about change, how to take an issue that nobody wanted to deal with and bring it into the mainstream. And I think I figured out much later on that my role in politics was to do that. It was to take things that were seen as marginal or, you know, just kind of not on the radar, and to push and to make them not necessarily win or achievable, but to make it more mainstream. And I realized that's what my role was. So again, I'm just quoting from my book. I knew a few of the missing women personally and many by name. I met Serena Abbotsway when, as a member of VANDU, the Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users, she was becoming politically active. I would often run into her on the street in the downtown East Side, and we would chat about what was happening at VANDU. She had warm brown eyes and a slightly crooked smile that lit up her face. I couldn't help but notice the scars on her face and skin, a visible reminder of her hard life. She was very interested to learn how things worked in Ottawa, and she told me she wanted to get involved politically in the upcoming election. "I want people to vote," she said. When Kim and I walked her to the Chinese Cultural Center on election day in 2000, she was excited because it was the first time she'd ever voted. True to what she had said, Serena was getting her friends to vote too, and I could see the pride in her face that she was taking charge, explaining the voting procedure and what to do if you weren't on the voters list, which most people weren't. I saw her a few times after that, and then, like so many others, Serena disappeared. She was later to be identified as one of Picton's victims. The trauma and suffering in the community was shattering. You could feel it on the street, the gnawing sense of community loss. Often I would go to Maine and Hastings and hang out just outside the Carnegie Center or a little further down the block where Insight was located. The street was always full of people. Even when it was miserable, cold, and raining, they would still gather and talk. So many times people would say how worried they were because they hadn't seen a friend in a few days. The fear about more sex workers going missing was on everyone's mind. And so part of my challenge was how to take that issue, which I think was the toughest issue I've ever worked on, and bring that to Ottawa. So in writing this book, I wanted to write not only about transformative change in terms of issues like this, or the drug issue, but also how we do need to engage with each other. And there are things that I learned about taking on some of these tough issues that I write about. And one of the things I learned is that again, these are obvious things, but I think sometimes we don't think about them. We need to build trust, especially on the left. As I get older, I get more and more tired of the divisiveness and the, you know, the judgment. And I feel that we have to create space for people, especially young people, especially new people who are new to political activism, and we have to withhold our judgment and that the fact that we think we know everything, and put aside the people who tend to dominate the political scene, whether it's in the community or whether it's in the formal world of politics. So in working on these issues, what motivated me and what kept me going was the connection I had to the community. That gave me the realism and the sense of imperative. And so I always saw Ottawa as just a place to do the business. You know, and a lot of people go into politics because they want power, and they get off on that, and they get a big charge out of it. It was never like that for me. It was more about issues and fighting for change and building alliances with people in the community. I also learned that if I wanted to bring about change on some of these issues, I had to understand my adversaries, even within my own party. Even within the NDP caucus, I would get a reaction and saying, "Libby, you're crazy. We're not gonna support setting up safe injection sites." I remember one MP from New Brunswick. He says, "Libby, if I go and talk about this or it gets out in my community, they're gonna think it's crazy, you know?" Because back then it was a criminal model. People who used drugs were criminals. And the response was lock them up. It was enforcement. Every day I used to get hundreds of emails from constituents saying, "Get rid of these people. Why are you enabling them? Why are you speaking for them?" And I decided, in fact, my own campaign manager said, "You know, Libby, you got to be careful. You may not get reelected." And I thought, well, God damn it, if I don't get reelected, I don't care. We've got to speak out on this issue, and we've got to speak the truth about what's going on. But getting in the head of your adversaries, that was something that was very important. I mean, I worked within a liberal government, within a conservative government through the Harper years, minority governments, and it was always the connection in the community with people at VANDU or Pivot or other organizations that propelled me to do the job that I needed to do in Ottawa. And I would go back to East Vancouver every week, and I would literally just hang out at Main and Hastings, like stand on the street, and people would just come by and you'd hear what was going on. And I would see the resilience that people had, that people were fighting back. And it always amazed me that the people who had the least amount of resources, the least amount of power, were the people who were prepared to fight the hardest. And I thought, well, you know, if people can do that, then I certainly can do my part in Ottawa. Now, in writing this book, there was an interesting byproduct. And it was only when I started writing it and, you know, thinking about a timeline of what happened when and various experiences, and I went back to my early organizing days in the Downtown East Side and then running for city council in the 70s and then getting elected. And so what came out of those reflections was that I had been a woman in politics. And what did that mean? Because I'd never thought about it. So weird. I was always so busy. I never thought about it. And all of my mentors were men. You know, there were very few women in politics when I got elected in 1980 at the Park Board and then 82 at City Hall. And it was only in writing this book that I kind of went, God damn it, it was pretty awful. And we found this clip from the Jack Webster show. Who remembers old Jack Webster? He would have candidates on his show. My partner was also on City Council, Bruce Erickson. We worked together very closely. Bruce was already on council. I was running. We had a three-year-old son, Leif Erickson, name you don't forget. And so looking at this clip today, I am horrified. There's Jack Webster. "Well, Libby, I see that your husband's trying to get you elected." Well, first of all, we weren't married, but... And then he goes on, "And who's going to look after baby Leif? If you're doing, who's going to look after little Leif?" And there I am. I look so innocent and polite. Now I just like, you know, fuck you. But back then I was like, I was like, Mr. Webster, don't you worry about Leaf. We'll take care of him. And so it made me think more and more about sexism in politics and what I and is still faced today. And so I started writing about that in the book. And I'll tell you, I think I've got more to say on this, because I'm still processing it, because I think this happens, you know. And the bottom line is this: we want a parliament. We want a political process and system that is diverse, that represents who we are as people in all of our diversity. And yet it is dominated by these, you know, archaic institutions and rules, and usually men who are very dominant and set in the way they do things. And we have to shake that up. So part of this book is about how to shake up that political world, how to, inside the party, in the caucus, in the parliament, but also in the community. And how do we bring these things together? I see Dr. Goldman here, and he was speaking about yesterday about teamwork. And where are those voices? You know, I went up to him yesterday and said, the two nurses that you spoke about, they were probably women. And as you said, they didn't get heard. So when we talk about kindness or teamwork, you know, I think women do this much better, by and large, than men. So how do we transform these kinds of institutions? So these are all things that I kind of get in and out of in this book. But mostly, it's about transformative change and how we can bring it about and how we can make it real. And, oh, just for a little plug on the workshop. So the workshop tomorrow, it's not a dialogue with me. Well, it is, but, I mean, it's a workshop on lobbying. Okay, it really pisses me off that there are these huge corporate lobbyists who get paid huge bucks. They have all kinds of power and influence in Ottawa and everywhere else. You never see them. It's all behind closed doors. What do we do? Don't we have voice? Don't we have power? Can we not lobby? Of course we can. You know where the term comes from? In most parliaments, there's lobbies, right, where the governing party hangs out, where the opposition hangs out. And so literally, when you lobbied, you were walking down the hallway and buttonholing someone and saying, hey, I want this contract, right? Now, there are rules about lobbying. You have to register. There is a public registry. Yes. Yes, and that's what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. How can you lobby? Now, to do it totally on your own would be pretty hard. But if you're part of a group or some sort of alliance or something, lobbying is entirely achievable. So I'm very sorry I left you with the idea that it's all, you know, doom and gloom, because I just feel so hopeful about what change can be and how it can happen. And one of them is through lobbying. You know, lobbying is just part of a picture of, you know, like getting out at big rallies on the streets is very important too. It's not either or, it's all these things, but lobbying is a part of it.
Former member of the Canadian Parliament, Libby Davies, speaking and reading at the Denman Island Readers and Writers Festival in July 2022. Her memoir is called Outside In. Davies also gave a workshop on becoming a registered lobbyist. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughan, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.